The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
The goal for you, if you read this book, is that you achieve financial freedom before 60. As its author did, we are sitting across Manu Sabnani, who is the author of Money Secrets. Manu has had has held many different roles in his life. He's a prominent journalist. In fact, he was... Manu, SPH is familiar ground to you, right?
Yes, of course. Yes, I was 15 years in the Business Times.
15 years.
From reporter to... eventually the editor-in-chief.
Yeah. Yes, MD at SPH.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
MD at DBS.
Yes, DBS, man.
Editor-in-chief of Today newspaper over at MediaCorp.
Yes, that's right.
Chairman and CEO of Rafflesia Holdings Private Limited as well.
Yes.
I want to take you back to a period of time that you talk about in your book. It's a great book, by the way, Money Secrets. Cruise Your Way to Financial Freedom. I liked it because you are so open about money in your life, from, you know, the $16,000 that you budget for your family monthly, to how you learned to invest when you were in Pulau Tekong.
Yes.
In 1976.
Yes, that's right.
What did you want to do in this book? Because you just released an autobiography.
That's right.
Recently. What did you want to do in this book?
Well, the autobiography was more obviously a broader picture of my childhood, my parents, and how I grew up, and the ups and downs of my life, and until where I've got to, and it includes my philosophy, my attitude to various issues and so on. But there were lots of requests, and I had planned this already, to write a book more focused on the investment aspects of my life and what I've achieved. And it's basically, my CSR, my own company, Corporate Social Responsibility, has been to promote financial literacy. So if you ask me what's the underlying objective or motive, that was it. I mean, to promote financial literacy, because I think we learn a lot of things in schools, in universities, but there's not much of a structured syllabi or whatever on how do you achieve or how do you manage your personal finances. And I think people work very hard. They save their money, etc. But sometimes it's a pity they do not know how to invest. And without investing, the money doesn't grow, and it kind of, in fact, gets stunted. And with inflation, you are overtaken by inflation, and you end up being upset or let down by why in your retirement you don't have enough money, even though you work so hard, right?
So you achieve financial independence at 55. Would you say the key was your many high-profile positions or your investments?
Well, that's I would say that, okay, I've done it this way. I mean, less people think that, hey, Manu, you're exceptional, right? I mean, in the sense that, oh, you had good high income, you know, in three different roles, DBS Bank, SPH, etc. And of course, you could achieve it. But the truth is, all my investments, what I now earn to cover my family expenses, are entirely from investments, in the sense that I kept my family savings from the job separate, and that's still there, and that's for them, and that's like in the house, the car, or the insurance policies and all, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the investments part is entirely grown on its own. The original sum was taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Original sum was something like just 200,000 is taken out, and now it's entirely investments, and that is enough to sustain the family. So I'm saying with 200,000, if I could do it, right, grow it, in the early years at compound rate of about 18% and so on. And that's how we got there.
You say in this book, a semi-retired lifestyle is not just for the very rich in Singapore.
Exactly.
How attainable is this for the average Singaporean 2018?
Well, in the book, we have, help of my researchers, etc. We've come out with three tracks, right? One is a higher income. The other is middle income. And the lower income as well. But lower income... You have to be obviously more tight with your expenses. I mean, accordingly, the holidays, the food, the lifestyle is adjusted down, and you still save a certain amount. Then the compounding effect and the returns on your cash that you have saved lead you to a situation where it's still significant.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it doesn't cover entirely your expenses after 55, but substantially brings you there. You know, and also there are certain assumptions that every family will have children. So as they grow up and you get to 55, right, the entire expenses are not dependent on you, meaning that parental expenditure on the family goes down, and the children start to contribute and so on. So even for low income, you can do that. You know, if you bring up your children well and they get good jobs, I think you can do that. But the parents themselves will be independent as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Scrimp and save, some say it's not an investment plan. Scrimp and save.
Just scrimp and save? No. I think in anywhere nowadays, even though the inflation numbers, I used 1.7%, that's all in Singapore, it's not that high. But in many ways, you see other items coming up which are higher, which are not factored into inflation, like additional taxes, GST or whatever. So the answer is crimp and save. The banks don't give you a good deal. And there's one whole chapter in my book on banks are really not your friend. Meaning, I don't blame them. I'm not running down the banks. What I'm saying is that banks have their own profit objectives. They are privatized these days. So, you know, they got their own shareholders, their own stakeholders, and they got to show the results. And obviously, their margins are important. And, you know, they have this margin, interest margin. In other words, what they pay you on deposits and what they lend out, there's a big gap, basically.
Manu Samnani is my guest today, and we are reading his latest book, Money Secrets, Cruise Your Way to Financial Freedom. Manu, you're known for grilling boards with good questions and facts and figures, the way a journalist would. What do you think about the state of investment rights for the minority investor in Singapore?
I would say that, I mean, they're getting better. You know, well, one thing I observe is more people are asking questions and sensible questions. And they're good companies that tolerate the questions very well. They welcome it. I was just today at Wing Thai and Wing Thai Holdings, and the chairman was very forthcoming. I mean, I asked him, you know, about strategy for the group going forward in the property market, and you know, how he saw the property market, which was very important, because to understand his own thoughts, you know, I think we learn from him, right? His own thinking on the, he's an expert on the property market, and he was very, very good. And I also asked him other questions, but he appreciated. I mean, end of it, you know, and there were other shareholders asking good questions as well. So I think the trend is improving in terms of other rights. Also, yeah, we. People are more conscious of their rights, and they're pushing the boundaries, trying to expand the space.
And Manu Samnani is my guest today. We are featuring his book, Money Secrets, Cruise Your Way to Financial Freedom, which is targeted at everybody pretty much interested in achieving financial freedom before the age of 60. Manu, what should investors keep in mind given present market volatility?
Well, actually, if you are a careful value investor, and in my book, I mean, I looked at various things, property, REITs. REITs are part of property, but stocks, fixed deposits, insurance schemes. But the focus is coming back to stocks because, you know, stocks are really where you can achieve multi-baggers, meaning sometimes you can achieve double, triple your money over a period of time if you invest in good companies. And we have seen how some icons have done it, like Warren Buffett and others, right? I mean, there are others as well. Now, if you were to just put your money in insurance or put all your money in fixed deposits or put your money in sort of safer instruments like bonds, I think it's harder to have that kind of returns that I've achieved, I mean, on average, right? In the first 20 years, I think it was like 18%. And recently, with all the crisis and so on, SARS, including Asian financial crisis and all, I mean, it's gone down a bit, yeah. But overall, still, if you look back, that 200,000, what it has grown to, and the kind of dividend income it brings in, you can do with stocks. That's one important point. Second is that you don't need to be global, like go all over and invest in US and stay up at night and monitor the price of Facebook or Amazon.com. Yes, I mean, those are good stocks, but you can actually do it just in SGX. I'm not saying you should not invest elsewhere,
wow,
you know, broaden out.
Yeah.
But I'm saying you can do it in this pond, so-called pond,
wow,
local pond, you know. So you've done it mostly through SGX stocks because SGX is more than Singapore operators, businesses. They are, SGX companies are actually quite regional. Some are global even. You know, they invest in China, they invest in...
Yeah, people think they have to buy into Facebook or they have to buy into the FANG stocks, which today are not doing very well, by the way.
Well, they did well for some time, but whatever goes up must also come down. I mean, sometimes you get extreme run-ups and then you're getting corrections in the FANG stocks. But I'm saying you can do it to some... look like some state Singapore companies, but you can do that. Yeah. I mean, they give you a regular return and over time it grows and it's enough.
What's been your best investment to date?
single best investment, gosh, well, I would say there have been a few, some, you know, like I can give one example. Now it's not doing that well, but for example, a Golden Agri is a Malaysian, Singapore SGX company, but invests in Indonesia and so on in plantations. And at one time in about 20 years ago, they were having big problem because, you know, the Asian financial crisis and and they deposited a lot of money in their sister bank. And the bank itself was in trouble. So the concern of shareholders was, will this money be lost? And it was a big amount, like 600 million Singapore dollars, because they generated a lot of cash. And I thought eventually the bank will be rescued and they'll get their money back. So I was buying it very low, truckloads of it, and truckloads of that stock, you know, and at a fraction of what they IPO'd at. And eventually when they recovered, like it was a multi-bagger, 7-8 times, you know, what you had put in.
Love so, that story.
One of those. But there are many others that over time have helped me to get where I am. I think the important thing to emphasize is that in my book, financial freedom is more than just financial independence or retirement funding. So some books focus on, like, you got to invest and build up enough funds for retirement, right?
Yeah.
And they're looking at just a chunk of money that you have, which you then spend, and by the time you're gone, you leave this world, you know, you and your spouse or whatever, the money is more or less depleted. So they're looking at that way. That is called retirement funding, enough for retirement and to use it all up. Whereas mine is, financial freedom means you build up enough passive income that you don't need to work anymore, and just on that recurrent income, you can survive, you know. That means you're not eating the capital part of it.
Yeah.
You're still keeping the capital and it's still growing, but you're just depending on the dividend and interest income to survive.
Wow, how much deep research would you need for that?
No, not really that much. I mean, just knowing Singapore companies, SGX companies, picking out the right ones and attending their meetings and getting to know, having some faith in the... First of all, you have to have faith in the people behind the companies. And then you got to understand their business. And if they are honest people, even when the business are down, usually they will solve the problem and try to bounce back and so on. So businesses are all about problem solving, right? That's one thing I found when I did a study of 30 companies for SIM University, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at 30 companies over 30 years. Mm. I mean, how did they achieve their success? And if you ask me, I wrote a whole book on that as well, like a manuscript, all the case studies, but... If you say, crunch it down, tell me, what was it, Manu? I would say, you know what it was? It was people who could solve problems.
Yes.
Because when you run business, there's always a problem every day, right?
Yeah.
Today, my key staff has left the company.
Yeah.
Today, government has imposed a new tax on something, you know, or my rental is about to go up. All that. How do you solve it? How do you deal with it? What do you do? Whether it's customers, whether it's the government, whether it's your staff, having all of that, you got to be a good problem solver. And you got to be seen as a fair person. I think that's what business is all about.
But how does the ordinary investor who doesn't have access to the inner circles, may not know the management of the typical company, how do they pick stocks? I know you have a whole chapter on this.
How do they pick stocks?
Yeah,
well, first of all, I think you could start by, you know, subscribing to a database service like your own SPH has got shareinvestor.com. I mean, I use that, right? And they have all the info on each company. When you click on the name, it opens up, you get a fact sheet, and they tell you basically what the company does, what is the latest news, what's the paid up capital, what's the profit last 5 years, 10 years, dividend record. Look at all that first. Mm. And you can easily scan that in, like, each company, you spend 20 minutes and you get a good idea. And after that, you then decide, like, okay, find out a bit more, read the reports and all. And then when you start investing, invest a small amount and go and attend a meeting and get to know the people there, listen to them, read the annual report, and you get a better feel of their business.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the difference between investment and speculation?
See, speculation is basically short-term, meaning you may not be looking only at the fundamentals. You're looking at things like, something's going to happen in this company, they're going to buy something, or they're going to be taken over, or you know, and so on and so forth. Or sometimes look at the charts in a way, and you are not really looking at their fundamental business and can it grow over the longer term. And I think lots of so-called investors I meet at the AGMs are actually speculators who became investors because they bought it high, they buy the shares high, right? And then they get caught. because they didn't study it properly. They're just following a number, running after it, chasing, trying to make a quick money. And when the price drops, they refuse to sell. They don't know how to cut losses. They forget that they are actually a speculator, a trader. And they stay with it and they become long-term investor, and they come to the AGM and feeling frustrated that the share price is so low. But when you ask them, why did you buy it so high? They can't answer you.
So, Mano, what do you say to Singaporeans? You're 60-ish, you're in your 60s, achieve financial independence at 55. What do you say to Singaporeans who are in their 50s who have not, you know, built up their nest egg but want to start?
Well, I mean, if you are in 60, I won't say it's still too late. But first of all, of course, if you are in 60s, you got to look after 50s. Your health. 50s. Yeah, I think make sure you're healthy, first of all. Like whatever it requires, diet, exercise, all that. Then if you're okay, why not? I think you can still start at 50. At least you can improve your returns. Because I assume that if you are in the 50s, right, you already have a chunk of savings. Now it's a question of, do I just spend it and it all get depleted? Or can I sustain it by also deriving passive income? And you can, I think, quickly in a year or so, you can build up a portfolio and start deriving. If you just kept it in the POSB or something, yeah, you can start taking it out, putting it into more sensible investments. If you're not confident or not very literate, financially literate, I think you can give it to a mutual fund or someone like that. There are local good funds that don't charge much fees and they give you good returns. You can, so in other words, you can hand it to a fund manager, some of it, or spread it out among a couple of fund managers. But if you have the time, I think, and if you are retired, why not do it directly? You must be courageous and do it. I do it directly because at the end of the day, that is called direct investment, not through a fund manager, right?
You still do it direct?
Okay. Yeah, all the while I did direct. And my returns were good because I did direct. I mean, I'm sorry to say, but where I did keep with the funds, my returns were not that good. So I learned that, you know, it's best for me to do it myself because they have their fees and sometimes they don't perform.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you started 1976, you're on Pulau Tekong in doing your NS, and then you start to educate yourself about you start to educate yourself about investment.
Yes.
If you look back at your long, long investment trajectory, is there anything you would have done differently?
Not really, I think, not really. But I mean, like, well, one of those things was like the S-chips, perhaps, if I look back more recently in the last 10 years, the S-chips, these are China companies here. I think there was a lot of rah-rah about China is a growth market, huge market. You, no doubt, yes, even now, I think you can't ignore it. But many of the companies being brought here were not of good quality, and they would often be doing business in China but registered in Bermuda or registered in Virgin Islands or somewhere, right? And when there was trouble, like accounts, there were problems with the accounts, problems with the business, locally we couldn't do much. I mean, even the SGX couldn't do much because this is a company that is just listed here, but it doesn't have operations here. Operations are in China, registered in Bermuda, so they go by Bermuda law, and the business is in China, and often money is missing in China. It's very hard to go down and trace the money, what happened to it. So that, I would say, it's just that it's one of those periods where you invest in rather what seemed like promising companies and they were a total letdown. I mean, if I look at my portfolio today, most of the suspended stocks, which are suspended, like not even trading and heading for liquidation or whatever, all are mostly with the name either China or something to do with China, you know, Sino something, China something. they've all gone to the docks, so to say.
He never minces his words. Mano Sabnani is my guest in Reed. He's the author of Money Secrets. Where do you start if you're? You know, I'm sure many actually I've met our listeners who are NS men.
Yeah, NS men.
Yeah, they are. They're teaching themselves how to invest. So, what advice would you have for an absolute newbie besides buy your book?
I would say, I mean, it's not a plug for BT, but maybe at least you should start reading BT. Like, that was one of the things I did because I was developing an interest and then I thought I must read Business Times and whether I borrow back
or listen to Money FM.
Or listen to Money FM. Yeah, that's it. I mean, take an interest means read up whatever you can. And then if you can, buy books, simple books like, of course, my book or other books.
Of course, without
you know, there's so many books out there about how to invest. Be financially literate. Improve your financial literacy. And then start slowly and setting up an account with SGX is not difficult. Go down with the brokers. They'll help you set up everything, automatic gyro payments for your purchases and sales and dividends and link to your bank account. And then start it. But you must follow, in my book, I mentioned a lot about discipline also, because you must be disciplined in saving and also disciplined in your investment. Meaning that
every month put aside a certain amount?
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever you earn, you know, focus on, form a budget and do what you need and use that and live within your budget. And the rest all goes to savings. And when it goes to savings, then a lot of it is into investments. But in the beginning, keep aside 6 months of 6 months of expenses in case there's a crisis that you investing is all about having money for long term. So if you invest every last dollar without keeping any cash, then you find that when the market is down, you are really stuck. You can't get money out. So always keep cash in reserves. I mean, for me, in my portfolio, I've always kept like 15% to 20% in cash. Besides keeping cash for my family expense, which is a separate account, in my investments itself portfolio, I keep 15-20% in cash. And like now, the market is bad, right? It's market is bad. People say market is bad, but it's also a good
opportunity.
Time to buy.
Yeah,
go and buy. So the short of it is discipline. Make a start somewhere, even in NS or wherever. Read a lot.
Read.
And you have your work. Yes, focus on your job, but you've got to give time, at least on the weekends, spend 15, 20 minutes even if you can, but preferably more, like a couple of hours on the weekend to catch up with your investments.
He's a man who's made a lot of money and he wants you to make some money too. So pick up his book. It's a great read. Manu Sabnani, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And I haven't made a lot of money though. I mean, it's okay.
Enough to retire at 55. Enough.
It's hard work. It's hard work.
Well, I think a lot of people will learn to make every buck work for them if they pick up your book.
Yes, I think they will. Yes.
Yeah.
Really.
The book title is Money Secrets: Cruise Your Way to Financial Freedom. Thank you, Manu.
Thank you.